Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the Winning Plays Podcast on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider for the NBA's winningest franchise.
Welcome back to the Winning Plays Podcast with Brian Robb. I am Rich Levine. Jeff Teague is an NBA champion, B-Rob. Can you believe it? If there's anyone at the beginning of this season, especially for the first couple of weeks in Boston, the first month or so, that I looked on the court in green and said, that is an NBA champion. It was Jeff Teague, so I'm just happy to see him get what he deserves.
I mean, it's just reflective of opening night for the Celtics, where he couldn't miss a shot from three against the Bucks, no less.
That was his tryout. Who knew?
Right, his tryout. And then he had, you know, two really important minutes in game six there. And I know people do crap. I mean, again, he had no impact in this series, but I will give him this. Like, they beat game six with Giannis out against the Hawks. Like, he actually gave them – like 13 points in 10 minutes or something like that. So he, to win that series and get Giannis some rest. So like he was not the guy anyone wanted him to be in Boston. He was pretty much not that guy either for the Bucks, but he did come through at least in one game where it mattered. So props to Jeff Teague.
Yeah. You know, yes, exactly. I think he's made an all-star game in the NBA, played 12 years in the NBA, played pretty damn well for a lot of those years. He earned it. Right. He deserves, whether or not he earned it for over his 34 games in Boston, I don't think there's much debate on that. But good for Jeff Teague, a dozen years in the league. Any guy who lasts that long and carves out a career like that deserves to celebrate with a ring. So good for you, Jeff. Congrats to the Bucks. Of all the teams in the East, I think that could have won it this season. I think that's like the Milwaukee's like the least depressing, like the least emotional for the Celtics. I think we could, like, everyone can agree. Giannis is a pretty good dude. Like, it was good to see him win.
Are you forgetting about the Jrue Holiday pursuit though? Does that sting at all?
No, nothing stinging right now.
That's right, because it's like
at least about the Bucks,
right? Yeah, it is. No, it is, in terms of like the team building standpoint. Yeah, like you said, it's not Philly, it's not Brooklyn. It's a
even
team.
Miami.
Yeah, Miami. You know exactly. Like, and again, it's an example of like, okay, this is the model for what the Celtics are going to have to do. You have a couple stars in place, and then you hit on some low budget free agent signings, whether it's, you know, Portis or Forbes, and yeah, you spent all your chips on a big third guy in Jrue Holiday. And again,
you find
PJ Tucker midseason with whatever you have left hanging around, and then you get some luck in the playoffs with injuries and stuff. Yeah. And so that's Celtics playbook going forward here, pretty much.
And again, there's not, and we will see what happens with, I don't even know. I guess we'll see what happens with Brooklyn. Like if they can keep it together, but you look again, I imagine the Bucks will probably be the favorites to repeat. I mean, it's probably out there already. I haven't checked yet, but like the league is still pretty wide open again next year. I know Clay will be back. So like the Warriors will start to look a little bit like themselves, but old in capital letters, they are, you know, 3-4 years removed from their best. And that's without KD. So, you know, when you look at the makeup of the league and who the contenders are, you have two of the best players in the league in the Jays, and that's a pretty good start. So, you know, again, it's always too bad when a team other than Boston wins the title, but it could be a lot worse than the Milwaukee Bucks.
All right. So we have things coming up quickly here, Rich. We have the draft next week. We have free agency starting in 10 days. And it's, again, we we'll see. Wick Grosbeck said they're going to have a very busy summer. He didn't say fireworks, but just very busy. So we'll see again what happens next week, draft week, in terms of trades with other parts of the roster, and then who they go after free agency. And we'll be covering all that, but we have a little bit of a treat here today, Rich. We have a guest on, Jake Fisher, who wrote a really great book that came out, I want to say 3 or 4 months now ago, Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever, but has a lot of interesting Celtics nuggets in there about the tanking era. Great stuff all about the Bucks, the Sixers, Pelicans, Kings, all these teams in the last 5 or 10 years. So we're going to talk to Jake about that. We're going to talk to Jake about, again, this whole Celtics offseason, since he's been reporting plenty of stuff around the team as well. And yeah, I don't know. I'm tired of talking to you, Rich. So it's like, let's get someone in here.
Action.
All right. Now we are joined by the one and only Jake Fisher, who is been killing it all summer long as reporting for Bleacher Report, and also has a brand new book that's been out for a few months now, but is definitely a great summer read. It's called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed. We'll get more on the book later, because there's a lot of interesting stuff there, including a lot of stuff that connects back to the Celtics. But first off, Jake, you look freshly tan here off of a little vacay, despite working hard all summer. How's it going?
It's been good. You know, the one luxury of the job is also the peril of it being that you can do it from anywhere. So you're kind of always on the clock, but kind of always off at the same time. So.
Were you working? We heard you met your girlfriend's parents. Were you working at their house?
I did. I think one of the coaching hires I broke while like standing there in their kitchen while like making lunch plans for the day. And I was like, hold on 1 second, not to,
you know. That's kind of a power move.
I don't horn too much, but yeah.
Yeah, you can impress the parents with that breaking news while you're at their house.
Yeah, doing this job is definitely it's always good conversation fodder when you meet someone for the first time, you know?
Yeah. Aaron points me, like, it's pretty impressive. Impress the parents with the, yeah, I'm just breaking a story here. No big deal. But yeah, so Jake, you've been on top of, I feel like, all the coaching searches this summer, if you're reporting a Bleacher Report, but you have, you know, most recently reported on Ime Udoka's couple recent hires out of Portland. It seems like, is it fair to say it's going to be an all Portland staff here for Udoka out of the gate based off of how he's going here? And what's your read in terms of what he's trying to do with his staff right now out of the gate?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be entirely Portland people, but that seems to be an early theme for at least, you know, the major players on the front of his bench. I know there's definitely a lot of talk still that they're looking to bring on. Like, there's no, I think Jared Weiss wrote this yesterday, there's no like definitive answer we get that Will Hardy's going to be like the lead assistant guy, the associate head coach. There was talk for a while, Alvin Gentry might be a name they're looking at, but I don't think that's happening anytime soon. So I think there's still, you know, changes to be made and people to be added. I know they're bringing on a player development guy out of Philly's video room. I don't know if I'm allowed to say his name, so I'm just going to leave it at that. I think the biggest takeaway, look around the league, like a lot of front offices are just telling their head coach, this is going to be your staff. And it seems like Brad's been very collaborative with Ime in doing so. And I honestly don't share too many opinions out there, but I'm a fan of that perspective. I think that's, you know, the best collaborative way to build this is a team after all, you know, everyone needs to be working together at a certain point.
What are you hearing on you talked about the front office, about Boston's front office. Are they interviewing anyone, whether it's for like a GM position or any number of other positions within the front office?
No, I haven't checked on it in a little bit, but the last I heard was definitely that the Landry Field stuff still seems to be having momentum. I don't know how you want to phrase it. It hasn't gone away. I think, you know, definitely – Allison Feaster is someone who's going to play a prominent role, it sounds like. And then she was the only person along with Brad and ownership in interviews with head coaches, and definitely in Ime's final interview and all that type of stuff. And I know, I mean, anyone around that team, Brian knows that, you know, that front office has been probably the smallest in the league for decades now. It's been Danny Ainge and his kind of his homies. And that's great. Like, it worked for a long time, but clearly, you know, things took a different turn. And I think Brad is definitely looking to add in some new flavors and some new voices, and, you know, also kind of diversify the background of the people that he's working with as well.
Yeah, it's going to be, like you said, and I think you were one of the first to report on Landry Fields out there as a potential candidate, you know, way back when this change first started. But it seemed, I mean, at this point, we're a week away from the draft. I would imagine any of these changes, they're going to come after this offseason, it seems like, at this point. It's clear that, you know, just from talking to people, like, you're not going to make a big change like that this close to the draft and free agency. So maybe this is, it kind of seems like Brad's going to probably look at what he has right now. You know, he obviously knows these guys in the front office very well, but they can have collaborated with them forever. But then maybe he's just going to use this, how things go this offseason, and then start, use it as not an evaluation tool, but figure out, okay, who else do, you know, might potentially supplement this. Is that kind of what you kind of see in terms of from the people you talk to?
Yeah, I think that's across the board. There's a lot of talk of like after the draft. And I think also it's interesting, like when the move first happened, right? Like a lot of people around the league everyone expected Ainge to exit stage left, right? But most people were shocked by the Brad news. And the immediate reaction to a lot of people was like, well, what does this mean for Mike Zarin? And then the talk pretty quickly was, oh, well, Zarin's going to be like the shadow operator guy. He'll be the one pulling the strings and Brad will be the figurehead. But that does not sound like it at all right now. It really does sound like Brad is, you know, the engine driving this thing. And you know, I think he seems to be someone, we can talk about this later, you know, in the book, but you know, when he first got that coaching job back in 2013, Brad seems to be someone who likes to ask a lot of questions and reach out to people who he thinks are smart and wants to get their opinion on things before he, you know, really establishes, you know, what he's actually trying to do. And I think that's kind of been what's mirrored here so far. I think, you know, the slowness, the gradual process, just kind of taking it a day at a time seems to be the way he's kind of been operating so far.
Do you think, you mentioned the surprise at when Brad was named to his current position. I don't expect you necessarily have the definitive answer to this, but like, at what point do you think like Wick and the ownership actually consider that that might be the future of this organization? Was it like Danny starts to hint like, okay, I'm kind of wearing down. I don't know if I want to do this anymore. And then they're like, shit, what are we going to do? Like, oh, you know, we kind of, because my feeling is that they felt that they needed a change of head coach. Right. Like, even though they had just signed Brad to that extension, after the way the season went and the way that Brad was feeling too, probably, but like, I think ownership wanted a head coach, and maybe it was somewhat convenient and helpful, you know, to not have to pay a bunch of money to Brad if you're going to part ways with him after you just signed him to the extension. You have this opening. Do you think there's anything to that, that it just might have been, I don't know, like a perfect storm of kind of saving face and kind of simplifying the whole transition process?
I definitely think there's a lot of truth to that. I mean, anybody around the NBA you talked to around that time, you know, the consensus was this doesn't happen overnight. And then I talked to someone who, you know, I trust, who talked to Brad right after the bubble. And, you know, I think Woj was the first to kind of report this. Like, Brad definitely was telling people openly he was burnt out from the grind. And I think, you know, the more I get deeper into the league, the more it seems pretty apparent that the NBA is a mess. And it's, I mean, every single organization has infighting and people with conflicting agendas and, you know, people who are trying to push themselves forward in this whole, you know, basketball world, whether that be monetarily, whether that be, you know, legacy wise, whatever. And being the head coach in that environment, while it's, you know, a great job for a lot of people, it's also one of the more taxing and one of the more thankless ones too. Like, when you're Nate McMillan and you come in and you save the franchise, you gain a lot of influence, you gain a lot of power. You know, same with Tom Thibodeau in New York. But if you're a head coach who is holding the reins of a team that, you know, falls below expectations, you can get fired as the scapegoat pretty easily, right? And, you know, players come to you and complain to you about their minutes or whatever. Like, I think that is not what's happening in college. You know, when you're, you know, this global kind of name at a little dinky school like Butler, no offense to Butler, like, you're kind of the guy who everyone comes to you. You got to make sure coach is all right. You know, is coach happy? Blah, 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 blah. And I think, you know, after years of going through the Kyrie, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward stuff, mixing in with, you know, they had a cute little rebuild building for a while. All of a sudden the switch flipped and they were in this contending mode with mercurial guys like we just mentioned and expectations. And I think all that kind of did blend to the perfect storm, like you mentioned, where he's got this big deal now. Definitely. I mean, I don't know definitively why Danny wanted to part ways, but it seemed like there was mutual interest on all parties for him to take a step back and a step out, and Brad not wanting to necessarily be. I mean, I think it was kind of communicated to me that everyone involved with Boston kind of understood and wanted Brad to still stick around, but not in that role. And where is he going to go besides taking, you know, he's being paid that much money and he is so respected for his basketball mind by ownership. It seemed to be just like there is the only one place for him to move, which is taking over Danny's spot.
It is. It's just a wild change of events in terms of where this team was at even a year ago. I mean, like, obviously the Kyrie situation was what it was, but then, you know, they were maybe a Gordon and Hayward ankle injury away from the NBA finals a year ago. And now for, you know, everything for this season was not a true disaster for a franchise, but like the free agent signings obviously did not work out. I think Brad was clearly frustrated.
Jeff Teague's an NBA champion.
Jeff Teague's an NBA champion. We know that. So, I mean, everything worked. They gave away Jeff Teague. You know, we say what happened to him. They gave away Tice just to get out of the tax. So it's like, the Hayward situation, I think everyone knows that that was not, you know, probably managed the way they wanted in terms of the signals that he was probably going to be out the door, but they were acting like they could have a chance of re-signing him to the end. So you wonder how much all that factored into Brad's frustration this year. And like, if he was already burnt out at the end of the bubble, like he had talked about, what this past year for him must have clearly sent him over the edge. But then it makes me wonder, Jake, too, like, then you hear all the Indiana basketball buzz during the year too that he had to address. That obviously there was some, you know, real smoke there, it seemed like, for a little bit, but until he eventually, you know, cried down. But that, you know, probably happened around the same time this all maybe started to turnover happen within the organization. So it is the inside story of all that. I'm sure we're going to hear more about it in the years to come, but it is that chain of events seems to be really fascinating.
Yeah, just like you said, I don't have it definitively, but I would suspect that the Indiana stuff is right along when these contracts, you know, what are we going to do here? What's our next exit strategy for NAU, whatever. I think that seemed to have lined up definitely.
And then what's going to happen? We talked about, you know, after the draft, right? Everyone's saying after the draft. And then you have Danny's homies, right? That you mentioned who are working hard, working on this. And then is it like, hey, you just helped us through this offseason and potentially parting ways? Or is it just like, Is it that, like, Austin, thanks, you know, Dave, thanks.
Yeah, it could be like the NBA's can be ruthless and cutthroat. Like Portland, when they let go of Terry, you know, they brought in all the coaching staff one day into a conference room and just said, you're all gone. And that's happened in, you know, a lot of situations where, you know, an executive comes in, they go through the draft and they just fire everybody after the draft. Like Minnesota did that. Gerson Rosas, when he took over, it's possible. I don't know. You know, there's so much conflicting hearsay about Austin and Zarin and Dave, which I'm sure they're on one name basis with all your listeners with how, you know, parochial, you know, the Boston sports scene is. But, you know, there's definite rumblings that there'll be changes and that a lot of those guys, maybe all of them, maybe some of them might not be there moving forward, which would be, you know, of course, a pretty drastic swap from the way things have run there since I think Danny got hired in 2003. Yeah. So it's there could be some more changes definitely happening to the fabric of that organization, I think, in the next couple months or so, definitely.
It's what are you hearing in terms of, you know, they obviously cleared out their first round pick with to get rid of Kemba's contract for Al Horford and Moses Brown. Brad wasting no time to pull off that move, which I think kind of shows you where he was with, like, probably maybe the Kemba signing in the first place, or just, you know, that fit obviously after this past season. I'm interested to like your perspective. I think there's two ways they can go about this right now. They can, you know, extend some guys in this roster, bring back Fournier, you know, try to bring in some veteran pieces and make a run at it next year. Or I think there's a case to be made to say, hey, let's kind of keep our options open for long-term. Let's not commit all this money for the future beyond what we have to Brown and Tatum right now, just to see what we can do to, so we don't get, you know, tied up anywhere. What do you think the mentality is in terms of how Brad's handling this? And I guess obviously it probably will depend on what's the front office in place after the draft here, like, and what, and how they kind of view what this organization has right now.
Yeah. I think there's definitely expectation on the league that they're going to bring back Fournier. And you know, a lot of it is kind of just, they're not like, giving up Gordon Hayward for that and not, and maybe, you know, this is the, looking at things through this lens is where people make mistakes in this business, but you know, using that trade exception and giving up more assets just to get him
for second round picks.
I think it'd be viewed as a disaster to not resign him, honestly.
But it's someone else's disaster, at least in Brad's case, right?
Exactly.
That makes it easier. It would be harder for Danny to do it. Brad can kind of be like, okay, I need to just wash my hands of what Danny was doing down the stretch.
Exactly. That was going to be my point. So I don't
know.
Sorry about that. I don't know if that's going to be, you know, an opportunity for him to really pivot and say, look, this is put my stamp on this organization. Like, this is what I'm doing now. But at the same time, like Fournier, they made that deal because he is kind of like the perfect archetype to play alongside those two wings, right? He's another malleable guy who can switch a little bit defensively and he shoots and he's got some secondary creation ability. Like that's what you kind of want around those guys. And I think, I don't think his market's going to be like too crazy. There's younger guys and much more splashier names out there. I think Boston will have an opportunity probably to bring him back at a number that's not too high, like something between 12 to 16 annually. I think that's a pretty fair deal for someone like him. There's definitely a lot of talk about the point guard situation. You know, I've heard, you know, Jaylen Brown is someone teams are definitely looking at to like try and see if he's available. I don't think he really is, but it makes sense, right? Like there's all the speculation that happens on local radio about, are you going to fire Brad? Are you going to trade one of these guys? Like that happens on the league too. And I think, you know, they seem to have really established that that's not necessarily where they're going with that. I think they bringing in Jaylen and Tatum with this Ime hire, like it seems like they really did consult with him and his relationship with those two guys was a big factor. We're seeing this trend all around the league now, right? These former players who apparently can relate well to the players of today, right? That's what the notion is with Chauncey and same with Jamal Mosley. You know, Ime definitely seems to be someone who has a characteristic about him. I don't think they do without, you know, committing to these two guys. So I think that just trying to find more opportunities to benefit those guys and take off. And as much as you want to empower them with what they're, you know, giving the ball in their hands and allow them to create, I think you want to also find people who can help take off the pressure and put those guys off ball and use them coming off the screens and stuff like that.
Let's hear from our sponsor, Bet Online, which is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. We know baseball season's in full swing right now. They just got out of the All-Star break, but you can get odds on that. NBA, off-season stuff, NHL, UFC, real-time updated odds and props, almost anything you can imagine. So before things get going, we know you want to make some summer league bets, Rich, too. So before you head on over to BetOnline on your laptop or mobile device and take advantage of the 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't sit on the sidelines. You can use the promo code CLNS50 to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. It's BetOnline, your online sports experts.
It's funny because you talk about that, like the approach for many teams with hiring new coaches this year. And then you look at the NBA champions. I mean, I feel like my respect for the position, but I'm going to obsess a lot less about NBA head coaches after watching Coach Bud now become an NBA champion after some of the moves. And great, he's a great offensive mind. He had a great defense in Atlanta as well. Not the greatest in-game adjuster. You wouldn't expect him to relate to players on the level that some of these former players do. And it goes out and wins its title. It's just an interesting sort of caveat to the, you know,
yeah,
the new rules of what it takes to have a winning team in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, kudos to Butt. Like, he did that with rampant speculation up until even when they were down 2-0. Like, there was always, there was still rumors like, oh, you know, maybe he'll get fired.
He should leave. He should walk out. He could go out on top. That's the best move that he could do right now, because they still want him out, I think, don't they? I mean, the win's a win, but like, it could only, you know, the luster will wear off soon enough. He could go get any job he wants, retire as a champ, and then, I don't know, save some face.
There's one thing I'll say. Winning is a really powerful drug, really powerful drug. And, you know, you see Giannis running up to him post-game, slapping him on the chest and saying, yeah, we're going to do it again next year. I think he's probably okay.
He's got to get that extension signed right now is what he has to do after that. You brought up, you know, the coaches around the league that were hired this offseason. Obviously, a lot of guys that relate to players. From what you've heard, Udoka, just as a recruiter, we know obviously the LaMarcus Aldridge story, but I wonder, is that something, do you think that the Celtics will realistically try to tap into like right away, even potentially this offseason with, you know, probably half the Spurs roster, like as for agents? I'm not sure how many of those guys they'll be interested in to in terms of fits, but do you think he could be, you know, at least from a face of the franchise standpoint, of think, okay, we know that the front office might not be set yet, but okay, like, this is going to be the guy that we're going to send into meetings and at least, you know, try to help recruit when we don't have, you know, much to spend on anyone yet.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, Boston's going into big time free agent meetings this summer. Like, I don't think that's really in the cards or the goal. They're still pretty, you know, they traded Tice to avoid the tax, right? They're still flirting with that line. I don't think they're going to be making any drastic splashes here. I could be wrong, but I think long-term Ime, and that former player, you know, being able to relate to these guys, hold them accountable while also kind of being buddy-buddy with them. I think that's more at maximizing your roster rather than using that in free agent meetings. Like, I don't think Tyronn Lue is considered to be, like, the best at this, right? That's what, you know, he was hailed for in 2016 with LeBron. That's why the Clippers elevated him last year. But he's not like going in meetings and he's the reason why players are coming to play for the Clippers, right? Like, he's just there to kind of be like the big brother type figure that can sit these guys down and be like, I've been in your shoes, blah, 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 blah. So I think that's more of where that like dynamic and those characteristics play a factor, and just like being able to look Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the face and say, like, I played in the league. Like, I know what's going on. I know I've been there. Like, I got you, buddy. Even though he wasn't a star, even though he wasn't a Chauncey Billups, he still like played for the Spurs, and, you know, people respect veterans and people who have came before them. And that's why, you know, you see Jared Dudley's on the bench in the 15th man type role, or JJ Barea type stuff, like that veteran leadership type figure. I think now that's just being valued in the coaching role to be able to, I mean, the players now have more power than ever before. And I think maybe this is a potentially a mechanism too for front offices who aren't there on a day to day, or who don't look like the players, right? Most of the front offices are nerdy white guys. So maybe this former player type figure is also someone who can kind of be more of like an intermediary and more of like a synergetic piece between kind of the front office and the players too.
Before we get to the book, how long is the LaMarcus Aldridge story? Because I have not heard it yet.
Basically, I mean, he was a Spurs assistant and like was supposed to be a big factor in helping to bring LaMarcus to San Antonio. Like, they had a really great relationship.
Okay. And they played 1 year together in Portland or something like that. Like,
I think they played together at least 1 year.
Yeah.
So he was like that guy we're just talking about, the Jared Dudley, the veteran at the end of the bench who had his wisdoms and his process and whatever that like LaMarcus really gravitated towards. And then when he was an assistant in San Antonio, apparently played a big factor in helping bring him there.
All right, and we're going to get to the book in a second here, but I guess and this will actually lead us into the book since we'll finish off talking about Brad here. But I'm, as it relates to this offseason, the Celtics future, I'm just fascinated to see, again, Brad coached these guys, and there's a lot of young guys on this roster. And we know, obviously, Jalen and Jason Pryor going away, but even, like, I think Marcus Smart is another name this offseason that's going to be like, okay, what is going to happen with him? Because even if they decide to keep him, if they don't extend him, from what I hear, he's not going to be a happy camper.
He wants to get paid for sure.
He certainly does. So it's going to be, it's rare you see just, you know, obviously any coach be elevated into this position, but particularly a coach who has worked with these guys for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So, I mean, from that standpoint, from what you're hearing, like whether it's smart or just, you know, some, maybe there's a ton of younger guys on this roster. I'd imagine some consolidation is going to be in play this offseason, particularly since, you know, there are obviously a ton of money to spend in free agency.
Yeah.
But do you feel like those moves could be made anyway, or do you think like they'll settle, they'll kind of wait and see, obviously after the deal with Fournier, and try to get the ducks in a row with whatever the new, you know, however the structure is going to look like in the front office before kind of dealing with that?
Yeah. I think part of the smart situation is that he's been very aware that he's been their best trade chip for, you know, a long time now. His name has been in trade rumors after trade rumors after trade rumors, right? Like, and I think part of that also is that Ainge's staff like definitely valued him very high. And I mean, obviously he's such an integral part of what Boston's done ever since they drafted him. And he's probably had more of a role and an impact in Boston than he would have had in any other team based off of he was the number six pick in that draft and was considered to be like a future all-star type player, but he's just not. He's a sixth man, but for a sixth man to have as much, to be as much of the heartbeat of that franchise for so long is pretty rare, I think, in the NBA. So I think that dynamic, obviously Brad has valued him, right? He's put him in, you know, he's gone to battle with him, for the lack of, you know, less cliche expression, like time and time again. And I think that's, you know, going to be projected into how he views him as a front office executive too. But at the same time, right, like if you are trying to upgrade your team, this is a business. He remains the best asset for Boston. If it's a sign and trade or whatever, I don't know if the cap off the top of my head, like if that's allowed based off a situation, but I think it's necessarily like he's still necessarily their best opportunity to improve in some aspect. And there's definitely Marcus Smart fans around the league. So the young guys, I think there's been talk that Brad has not been as thrilled, but with the latter draft picks, if you will, like Carson Edwards, you know, never sniffed anything. Tremont Waters never really became much. And I think, you know, Nesmith obviously kind of got some burn at the end of last season. And I think that's a precursor of what's to come, but you know, I think anyone who really wasn't, I think it's pretty straightforward. Anyone who wasn't getting and gaining opportunities with Brad, I don't think they're long for the Celtics world. I really don't.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating thing to watch. And like you said, you can kind of see firsthand who he trusted and who he didn't. And now he gets to make those choices as we go on here. All right, let's talk about the book here as we have about, you know, 10 minutes left. I got to take off, Jake. But so you talk to, you know, hundreds of executives, players, coaches around the league to kind of look at, and again, the book is called Built to Lose, How the NBA's Tanking Era Changed the League Forever. It's available everywhere now. It's great stuff. And you looked at the Sixers, obviously, in depth, a ton of other teams in there, including the Celtics, who were obviously beginning a bit of a rebuild that ended pretty abruptly. But you had some fun Brad Stevens anecdotes, you know, that you got from there. What is, even stuff that didn't make the book, what are the nuggets that you think might be of interest for C's fans out there?
My favorite Brad Stevens nugget, it's in the book. You know, Ron Norred just got hired in Indiana. Pretty respected young coach in the league. He was a point guard on Brad's Butler teams and was coaching at high school. But when Brad came over to Boston, he brought Ron with him onto his staff. And Ron lived in their basement, in their house. I think – I don't remember what town off the top of my head, but he's somewhere, you know, right in that vicinity, right in the Waltham vicinity. And, you know, every night they would have dinner. And I think it's really interesting because this is a fight in my family when I go home to my parents. They listen to music lightly in the background and they would have dinner and put the kids to bed. And then Brad, Tracy, and Ron Norred would play these super competitive games of Racco. People don't know that game. It's like you have a plastic rack and you get like 10 cards. And it's kind of like Gin Rummy. You have to pick a card from the pile and swap it out with a card in your rack, but you have to get them in order from descending down or ascending, whatever way you want to look at it. But the only way you can move the cards is by swapping them with a card you pick out of the pile. So it's a little complicated. And to like show Brad's competitive fire, you know, whenever he would win the game, he would sign the score sheet with his big autograph, like a painter, you know, trying to put a stamp on the victory. So he's like definitely competitive, even over little board games with his wife and house guests. And you know, I think that he's such a cool, calm, collected guy on the sidelines and his press conferences. I've heard that's kind of been something that he kind of modeled after Larry Bird. Larry was like his favorite player while he was growing up. But like the same thing with Larry, he was that stoic guy, but behind the scenes, I mean, and below the surface, Bird was as competitive as anybody, right? And that whole fire that Bird beneath him, I think it's in Brad too. So, you know, that's why he's continued to move up the charts, I guess, if you will, in this basketball world, because he wants to win. He wants to win at the highest level for sure.
It also has slightly different priorities than some of those people. I think the fact, and I think you wrote this in one of your stories, that like he missed those game nights with his wife, mm-hmm. which yeah. is why some guys will sacrifice everything to do it. But I think family is probably a little bit more important. Those relationships are more important than Brad, than your stereotypical like stone cold killer in the NBA, which is why I think this position, if he can find success in it, that's really a perfect situation for him. He can still be home at night. And because I imagine he'll be on the road at times during the NBA season, but for the most part, if they're, you know, when the team's in Milwaukee or Utah, wherever, he'll probably be at home, I imagine.
Yeah. And it's interesting also to see where he's at now, being that when he got brought in there in 2013, like it was definitely, like Brian said, the rebuild didn't last as long as people might have thought it was going to at the onset. But he was just as much of like a kindergarten-y, like we're going to grow you and nurture you, like Brett Brown was in Philadelphia. There was probably more of a lens of like being competitive and wanting to win. Like when Jay Crowder first got there, he heard all the talk about tanking and rebuilding and whatever. And he went right to Brad and was like, Brad, are we losing games on purpose here? And Brad was like, no, like we have a very stacked deck against us, but I'm going out there every night trying to win. And I think the way he was able to really work with all those guys and empower them, and from Evan Turner to Jared Sullinger to Kelly Olynyk, like he was so tactful at maximizing all those players' skill sets. And I think a lot of coaches, like aside from all the interpersonal disciplinary stuff with Nate Bjorken in Indiana, like one of the biggest problems I think that everyone talked about with him this year with the Pacers was that he was trying to fit his roster to his scheme. And Brad was a direct opposite. He didn't even have a scheme. He was designing stuff based off of the strength of his players. And I think that helped them and pushed Boston back into the postseason so quickly, because he was just getting the most out of these guys that weren't supposed to be that good that point in time.
Yeah. It's that whole era, just how quickly that changed and how quickly, again, even the, from what I heard, he'd be, you know, advocate in the front in those meetings around the trade deadline to say, hey, like, don't tear this apart. And then that's when you got the Isaiah Thomas trade and some other random parts that turned into something. And then we all know where things went from there. So it is clear that how big of an impact he had on, you know, just shaping that rebuild out of the gate. But again, this, you guys should definitely check out this book. A lot of cool Celtics anecdotes in there. There's a cool Evan Turner story in there in terms of the old C's hangouts that I really enjoyed checking out. And then again, the Sixers, the Bucks, like the Pelicans, Jake really covered it all. So check this out. Great vacation read. Great anytime read, to be honest here. But
thank you, man.
Definitely something I'm looking forward to finishing going through as once this NBA season or this offseason, this grind comes to an end. Hopefully at some point in August, or we'll say, Jake.
What was your favorite interview? Like, what was your moment where you're like, oh, I can't believe I'm actually interviewing this guy or girl for this book? Was there one interview, one get that really blew your mind? Or
I mean, I got George Karl for like an hour, just like super candidly giving me all this shit on DeMarcus Cousins and the infighting for all that kind
of stuff. He's still fighting that fight. Yeah,
it's insane. I mean, that's kind of, anyone who's read the book always gives me the King's feedback that like the King stuff is like made for TV. You can't make this up. But honestly, Evan Turner was someone I was chasing for so long. We like kind of have a little relationship dating back to his days in Philly, but like anyone who's spent time around Evan, like Brian knows, he's a different dude, and he'll go from being like the most warm, kind-hearted, like put his arm around your shoulder, make fun of you in a kind way, to be like, no one fucking talk to me, like leave me alone, I need to go home and like whatever. So he was kind of like messing with me for months, like telling me he's going to call me at this time, and then like calling me that time, like 12 hours later or something like that. And finally, he was on Portland at the time. I think I might have even been with Atlanta that one quick stint in with the Hawks. They were just like here for a morning shoot around in the, at the Garden. And I just walked up to him and I was like, dude, I need 20 minutes with you, man. Just like, please sit down. And when I got him, he was the man. He was gold. I mean, when he's on, he's on. And like talking about how he was, before we got to Boston, he was like depressed, like thinking about leaving the league. Like he was having this whole kind of quarter life crisis, like identity crisis, thinking, do I even want to be in the NBA anymore? And then he gets to Boston. And I think it's kind of beautiful how Brad in that situation helped him kind of figure out his career again. And he kind of passed that knowledge back down to all those young guys, I think played a big factor in IT and Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart and a bunch of those people kind of finding their footing in the league.
All right, Jake, last question for you here. Obviously, you know, I think a lot of what you reported on for this book was the time before the NBA made kind of moves to restrict tanking a little bit, mm-hmm. to change the way teams approach it. Do you think we've seen the end of the tank? Are we on the downslope? Did we reach the height of the tank or the bottom of the tanking era? Did these moves change the way teams are actually going to approach things?
Yeah, I call it the tanking era in the book, 2012 to 2016, when this became in vogue, when like now it's a talking point that any fan at a bar is like now having, right? I think the Sam Hinkies and the Danny Ainges and the Rob Hennigans and the Ryan McDonoughs of the world like helped streamline this conversation of team building as being something that's just like common now. But you know, the league will pump out their chest and say that they solved tanking with this lottery reform. We'll see it right now in the 2021 draft class, right? Where it's considered to be the best class since 14. And these top four guys are supposed to be, you know, franchise changing guys. So Orlando and OKC and Detroit and Houston, like they all tanked. And we're going to have this year coming up at a certain point where high school guys are probably going to be back in the fold. And that's going to be long position in the draft is dependent on your draft record. And as long as smaller market teams are so disadvantaged in free agency, I think we're always going to see tanking happen in the NBA. I just think it's not going to be part of the discourse like it was back then. It was the number one storyline in the league.
Yeah, it's going to be, I mean, we'll see how many picks Sam Presti can package here before they further reform the taking the lottery odds in the future here. But you're right, it is, as we see just the evolution of this. And again, even the coaching standpoint, I think this league is evolving quickly right now. And again, the perspective you provide in this book is like just a great look at it. And I honestly, you'll probably have enough material to write another book on this in another couple of years based on where this goes. So, all right, well, give us the final plug here for the book. Like again, where can people get it? What's why do you want everyone to get it? And what else have we missed?
That's
a good tease for it.
I mean, I think you said that, you know, the league evolving and the perspective about it. Like I talked to over 300 people for this book and I'm still talking to people every week now, you know, to bring the, what I'm hearing quote unquote to you guys for this. And like the NBA really is this moving ecosystem with all these moving parts and all these individual actors with their, you know, own agendas. And the book tells the tanking story through that lens and really peels back the curtain at, you know, execs fighting with their head coach and fighting with agents and players, you know, wanting to get out of there or, you know, get more minutes to get their, you know, their next payday. Like all this stuff is happening behind the scenes all the time. And I really wanted to, you know, peel back that layer and bring people truly behind the scenes. And I think there's so much from stories to, you know, to kind of newsy tidbits. There's something in there on every page that's originally reported that people, any NBA fans is going to love. So if you want to get it on Amazon, bookshop.org, my publisher Triumph, Barnes & Noble, that'd be great. If you could rate it and review it, if you buy it, that'd be awesome too.
Yeah, the most important thing is, where do you get the most money? Where should we buy it from to give you the most money?
Across the board, it doesn't really matter as long, but we want print. The Kindle print. Ebook is great for the yes. environment, but not as great for me. So...
Did your girlfriend's father put any pressure on you for buying the engagement ring? Like, do we need, like, with these funds?
That is years away. That
okay.
Is
years okay. Away.
But he's got a copy of the book and he loves it too. So.
Okay, perfect.
And his best friend. His best friend's been reading it cover to cover. So
there you go.
Awesome.
All right. Well, again, everyone check it out. Built to Lose, How the NBA is Tanking Era, Changed League Forever. You can get it pretty much anywhere online or in your local bookstore. Jake, thanks so much for coming on. Really great to catch up with you and talk about this book and this crazy offseason.
For sure. Thank you guys, and hope to see you in Vegas and, you know, Boston or New York sometime soon.
See ya.